not one of them escaped. And they took them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. John, you remember that place where right near the foot, as the highway moved along beside Mount Carmel, where the brook Kishon runs right along beside the highway at the foot of Mount Carmel. This is the spot where they brought them down and they killed them. And that sounds so brutal. God always wants to take the knife to anything that is crystallized in its position against Him. You see, there were some people who were not undecided on Mount Carmel that day. The 850 false prophets were not undecided, so that it didn't make any difference how much fire fell, they were not convertible. Elijah was not undecided, but in between these two camps, one representing the Jehovah God, and the other representing the Balaam, or the Baals, the false gods, in between there was this entire converse of people, this entire nation of people who were undecided. Now we'll have to admit this about Elijah. No matter what you think of him, whether or not you like this kind of character, whether or not you like his uncompromising brutality, whether or not you favor the way he stands and the way he acts, you'll have to admit this about him. He knew God. And he knew him well. He had been schooled and cultured through all the processes that we've been looking into in recent weeks on Sunday evening. And he had come to know God and know Him well. He had known Him to the point of perfection as far as a human being can trace the being and the personality and the activity of God. And one of the minor prophets registers this as what I believe to be a recorded rule of God. They that do know their God shall be strong, and they shall do great exploits. Now that explains the principal reason why Christians are not strong today and why God's people are not doing great exploits. It's simply because we do not know God. And knowing God, we then do not know Him well. They that do know their God shall be strong and shall do great exploits. And because there was a man there who knew God, God drew a line, planted him on one side and put everybody else on the other and the undecided in the middle. And He allowed this man to drag and drain down out of heaven all the fire that God could make expendable to anybody who really knows Him and really trusts Him. This man knew God. Now we live in a day when the fire, the holy fire of God, has disappeared from the altars of God. Where the altars of Baal clutter the landscape on every side all around us. And there's false fire coming not from the top side but the underside. Coming from man's hands and Satan's hands and coming from hell, and it's filling the altars on every side where we look. And God's fire has been taken off the altar, and people are not able to bring down or drag down or drain down fire from God. I want to share with you a devotional comment from one of the greatest current contemporary devotional writers. Quote, "In our day, the greatest lack in the life of the individual Christian and of the church is the fire of God, the manifested presence and mighty working of the Spirit of the living God. There is little about us," and I hope you're listening, "there is little about us that cannot be explained on the level of the natural. I think at least 95% of what takes place in our average church could be explained on the level of the natural. Our lives are not fire-touched. There is no holy conflagration in our churches to which people are irresistibly drawn as a moth to a flame. It's the absence of the fire of God which accounts for the insignificant impact the church is making on a lost world. It never had better organization. It never had a more scholarly ministry. It never had greater resources of men and means. It never had more skillful techniques. And yet never did it make a smaller contribution to solving the problems of a distraught world. Our prayer should and must be, Lord, send the fire." Now let me ask the question. Just when was it that the fire fell? When was it? There's certainly a great significance in the first word of verse 38. Then the fire of the Lord fell. Why didn't it fall when they first came together? Why didn't God just suddenly rend the skies and spill the fire down on them and consume whatever needed to be consumed? Why didn't God wait until this processing was over and then do it in some other way? Why the word then? Well, I want to present to you the real fact, and it becomes imminent that you see it in this text. If you're going to understand it, it becomes imperative that you see it. The simple fact that the fire fell in a sequence of activities. And I want to mention to you what those are. Number one, the fire fell only after the altar was repaired. And if we're not willing to go to this point, there's no reason to go past that. We can walk on any of the other four or five things I would say and tread heavily on them, and we'll never have the fire of God until the altar is repaired. Let me read to you what the account says. Verse 30, Elijah said unto all the people, come near unto me. And all the people came near unto him. And he repaired, you'll notice he did not create any new altar. We're not looking for a new religion. We don't need it. We've got all of heaven dormant in the one we've got at our fingertips, not being employed. And he repaired the altar of the Lord that was broken down. Now, I want you to listen carefully. Please don't miss this. And Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, unto whom the word of the Lord came, saying, Israel shall be thy name. Now, let me remind you where this nation was. It was divided. 10 tribes had formed one part and 2 tribes the other. It was divided into hostile parts, Israel and Judah, and all fragmentized, and they could not get together. And the ones in the north were trying to keep separate from the ones in the south, or at least the leaders were, by allowing them to worship there instead of going down to Jerusalem. So there was a division in the people. Elijah said, if we're going to have the fire of God, we've got to refuse to see that division. We've got to refuse to see it. I'm pointing you back to the time when Israel was at its heyday, when the nation of Israel was at its highest point, at its brightest day in glory, when it was looking God in the face as a unity of people, and God was blessing it with eminence and preeminence in the world. And I'm pointing you back to that. Do you want anything like that again? Then you'd better get together, people of God, because that's the only way the fire will fall. That's what Elijah is saying. You remember how the day of Pentecost, the account of it opened? Acts chapter 2, verse 1. When the day of Pentecost had fully come, they were all together with one accord in one place. And that is the first requisite for the falling of the fire from heaven. Where we do not have to agree, our minds may be different, but our hearts hunger after the same thing. Where we long for the unloosing and the unleashing of God's fire from heaven, that dispensational kind of fire that started on the day of Pentecost when God's Spirit fell and in cloven tongues, distributed tongues like as a fire, it set upon each one of them. This is God's fire today. And our God is still a consuming fire. He's still able to lick with the flames of His Holy Spirit all the dross there is anywhere in anybody at any time. But it requires the fire of heaven. We cannot produce that. And all the fire we could raise up on the altar from the underside, from any source, will not produce that. It requires the falling of the fire of God from heaven, and we can't do it. And the more we struggle, the more we thrust ourselves in, the more we refuse to relax, the more we say, Lord, this is your affair. I cannot do one thing about it. The more we refuse to say that, the less likely we are making it to ever see a demonstration of the fire of God. What I'm saying is this. It is only when we rebuild that altar, which is the emblem of an absolute and total worshipful dependence on God, where we forfeit all hope in ourselves, that God will ever answer from heaven by a responding kind of fire. It was when the altar was repaired that the fire fell. I repeat, they built no new altar. No new altar. There's no fire of the Holy Spirit that will fall till God is reinstated in His rightful place. And when He's reinstated in His place of absolute supremacy, whatever else may be true of us, then the fire of God is going to fall. It's going to begin to fall all around us. So that's fact number one. The fire fell when the altar was repaired. Well, let me ask you, is there a broken down altar in your life? Be real careful. What about the stones? How about the stone of neglected prayer? How about the stone of neglected contact with the book of God breathed upon by the Holy Spirit? How about the stone of undisciplined life How about the stone of the compromising spirit? All of these things. These need to be fixed back together, made right with God,